FM.
Harmony Matters, proudly brought to you by Barfoot and Thompson.
Kia ora and welcome to Property Matters. We're taking a break this week, but we found one of our favourite episodes for you to listen to, so here it is now. You had a fabulous day. School holidays finished. Those routines are back as everyone heads back to school, but so brings the traffic. So if you're listening while you're in the traffic, you've picked the perfect time to listen because we're going to inspire you with lots of investment information as we welcome back Nicole Lewis from Property Lifestyle to the show. Great to have you here.
Thank you very much. Great to be here.
Now, you're a very busy person, so I appreciate you making time to come and join us. And for those who didn't tune in last time, tell us a little bit about yourself. Who is Nicole Lewis?
Oh, well, first and foremost, I am a wife and a mother. I sort of put my family first. What do? I do everything for the sake of family and showing the children how to live a better life. And property is my passion. I think I'm one of these lucky people that feel like I never do any work because I just have fun every day doing property deals.
I just love your passion. Where did that come from? Where was that first spark?
That's a really good question. I bought my first house when I was in my early 20s. And I thought to myself, you know what, when I'm like super old, like 30, you know, like when you're 20, that's so old, of course I want to be rich so that I can choose whether I want to work or retire or what I want to do. So I thought, how do you do that? I could either be a genius and start up a business, but I'm not. So therefore, property seemed to be the way that most millionaires made their money. I figured I could probably fuddle around and work that one out.
Wow, and it's done you well through time?
Well, it's definitely been up and down, yeah. But overall, yes, it has certainly led to an exceedingly good lifestyle.
Nice. Why do you see property as the key to investment?
I think probably two of the main reasons is that with property, you can actually make money with no money. So a lot of people don't realise that. You can buy property, sell property, do back-to-back deals with absolutely no money whatsoever. And in comparison to the other investment strategies, you know, shares or commodities or things like that, property, of course, you can leverage. We can borrow the bulk of the money to buy a property from the bank, and then we can actually make money both in cash flow by having a portfolio with rent coming in, and equity, in other words, money on paper, by having the property go up in value over time, or using somebody else's money.
Ooh, we're going to unpack that. So, look, last time we met, we talked about your book, Property Quadrants. So before we move on to the new things, I know how many people really loved reading this book, so I want to unpack that first. What was Property Quadrants all about, and can you walk us through those quadrants, which kind of answers how you got that investment in that first place?
Absolutely. So Property Quadrants came from my trial and error. I did property the hard way. I had no idea what I was doing. I did a lot of things right, and I did a lot of things wrong. And Property Quadrants was the sum total of what I did right and what I did wrong. And it basically puts property into four separate quadrants. So quadrant one is our family home. So in New Zealand, you know, it's our Kiwi way. We want to get our family home. And it's an emotional purchase. Mm. We want to live in a certain area or a certain street. We want a certain type of house. Right down, you know, come home from work. We want to relax. We want to enjoy ourselves. We want to feel good about ourselves. We want to have friends and family around. So it's an emotional purchase. And then we go ahead and we do that, we get our property, and then we get to the point where a few years later, maybe we've got a little bit of equity and we think, oh, let's get an investment property. But we don't know anything about property, so we enter quadrant two by mistake. And we accidentally make ourselves cash poor and become struggling landlords because we go and we buy a property using that same emotional criteria that we did for our first house, and we buy something almost as nice and almost as good a location that we think our tenants will like. And we have to end up topping it up, paying the mortgage, paying the rates, paying the insurance, and it makes us cash poor. So quadrant two is actually when, it should come much later, in your property journey, when you want to buy a holiday home or your kids are off to university and you want to buy a property where they can stay in with a few of their mates, or you want to buy a overseas property to holiday in, or you want to buy something that you think is going to have high capital growth, but it's going to cost you money. All of those cost you money, so it should come much later. After you've built up your cash flow from quadrant four. So quadrant four is buying investment property that's cash flow positive from day one. So we buy it, we pay our rates, our insurance, our mortgage, our maintenance and our property management fees, and we have money left over. Might start with, it might be a dollar a week, but we've got money left. So there's no stress, we're giving ourselves a firm security and a good start. And then quadrant three is the active income property, which maybe most people dismiss. They think it's not for them, but actually anyone can do it. And that's where you use property to make money. So you do a property flip, or you do a subdivision, right, or you do a development, or you do something really, really simple like property find. You go and find a property for an investor. So that's the, in a nutshell, the four quadrants. And really what we should be doing each time we buy a property, I was having a conversation with one of my mentoring clients before I came here, and he's umming and ahhing over whether he buys this property or that one. I said, which quadrant are you in? You know, do you want cash flow? Are we in quadrant four? In that case, look at the spreadsheet. Does that give us cash flow? Or are you in quadrant two and you're trying to buy for capital gain? In that case, does that give us capital gain? And once we ascertain what we want, then we can apply the right formula to make the right choice and add to our portfolio to strengthen it rather than weaken it.
Do you find everyone goes for quadrant one first and gets that family home ticked off?
They want to. They certainly attempt to, but it's getting more difficult these days.
Especially in the bigger cities.
Absolutely.
Yeah, if that's where their dream home is. I guess that was one of my quick follow-up questions was, you know, should we be investing in our bigger cities, or is there money to be made out of town in some of these smaller, more rural towns? Or not really?
No, good question. Brilliant question. In fact, we are finding currently right now, we are finding 90% of our cash flow properties out of Auckland.
Interesting.
Yeah. Auckland, it's too hard to make the cash positive unless you've got a big deposit.
Okay.
And even then, for an investment property, you've got to ask yourself, what's the best use of your money? Mm. Massive deposit in Auckland, or buy two properties outside of Auckland.
Mm, get yourself on that ladder.
Correct.
Yeah. What was the feedback from the book?
It actually blew my mind, to be honest. I mean, like, I wrote this book and I didn't really know what I was going to do with it. And then it got published, and it got published by an American publisher, and it hit number one in America, Canada, Australia and Germany.
Wow.
And I was like, how the heck did it do that? And then, of course, we had it printed, it came to New Zealand, and now it's in all the shops. It's also on Audible. I recorded it myself, and because I like to listen.
Yeah.
So I record it to myself, put it on Audible. And every month I get some feedback from some readers who just say, thank you very much for writing the book. I've learnt it. It's inspired. It's changed my life. And I love it. I love I can help people, because the book tells you how to do things. And a lot of books don't.
It's, as you say, a real practical book.
Correct.
For someone wanting to sort of get on the investment train, or who's already on it and needs to, I guess, streamline it, tidy it up, etc. Who did you aim the book at when you wrote it? When you first wrote it, who did you think would pick this up?
I aimed it really at property investors, or people to looking at getting into investing. Because what I discovered is that probably like 98% of property investors I knew all invested wrong. We all went straight into quadrant two and made ourselves cash poor.
Yeah.
And then we got stuck and we couldn't struggle, and we struggled. And it took me years to figure out quadrant four. I didn't even realise. I found it by mistake. And so then I started talking to my investor friends, and oh, really? Oh, yeah, that's a good way to do that. I got it wrong too. So I thought, okay, that's where it's really good to draw the sign and the line in the sand and work out what you're buying from the outset.
You mentioned the feedback that you've had. Have you had some good success stories come back at you?
Amazing.
Fill us in.
No, I've had amazing success stories, and I'm really stoked. I've got a really brilliant group of, I call them friends, because people come to me, we have a mentoring program, but we end up friends,
yeah.
And we carry on, we do things together. And I've actually written a second book, and I've used some of those clients' stories in the second book, and they have just achieved such amazing results.
Were they people who didn't think that this was achievable? Because that's how I read your book, is suddenly it becomes achievable.
Yeah.
And was that sort of part of the success for those people, or are they, do you have to have an investment mindset to invest?
Oh, look, to invest you have to have a driven and determined mindset. So Jesse is one of my clients that's in my new book, and oh, he's a remarkable young man, and he'd saved $34,000 from his working career and wanted to get into property. And he'd read a lot of books on property, but in his words, he said, nobody said how. Nobody. Mm-hmm. And then there he goes, I was in Whitcalls and I saw property quadrants picked off the shelf, thumbed through it and suddenly said, oh my goodness, here's the how. Bought the book and never looked back. And he's got his own property now. He's a landlord now. And I mean, in his words, it's things he never thought would ever be possible.
That's so cool. Last week, we had Tafari Hewitt on talking about sort of the financial side of mortgages, etc. And a lot around first-time buyers and KiwiSaver. And, of course, with KiwiSaver, you need to live in the home, but only for 6 months now.
Correct.
Is that then making sort of that, instead of quadrant one of buy your first home to necessarily be that dream family home, could you buy your first home with KiwiSaver to get on the ladder, live in it for 6 months, and then turn that into the investment and then make quadrant run sort of purchase number two or three?
Yeah. Well yes and no.
Yeah.
And
you see, fill me in.
It's a good question, because in a way you're mixing your quadrants.
Okay. So I like to mix things up.
No, let's mix it up. Let's muddy the waters. So quadrant one's emotional.
Right.
So to start with, very good point number one, we all want the dream home right out the bat. And if I look at all the things I've gone wrong, I've tried to do too much too quick.
Right.
So really we need a stepping stone house. And so should we then pull out our KiwiSaver, rent it, and then buy something else? And the answer is sort of.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you look at the criteria for quadrant four, it's quite different. Like, you want to buy a property that's got multiple incomes.
Right.
And you won't be able to achieve that when you buy your first home. So therefore, if you buy your first home, rent it out, you're actually moving into quadrant two. It won't be cash flow positive for you, so you'll still have to top it up. So, that's why I say sort of. Do I think it's a good idea to get your KiwiSaver and get on the property ladder? Yes. Yes, I do. But also, what people never even consider is using quadrant three to get on the property ladder.
Explain that.
So you sort of think, right, why don't I just go and do a property deal?
Right.
Like I go, okay, most people have heard of a flip, doing a renovation, buy something, renovate it, sell it. That's probably like the easiest way to make 50 to 100,000. But that's kind of level two of no money deals. Level one is just simply finding a property. So you'd go and you'd join a property investment group and you'd say, right, who wants me to look for a property for them? And you go and find something. No, not a first home buyer. You can't look for a first home buyer because it's emotional.
Yeah.
Right? You've got to look for a property investor based on the numbers. You go and you find something, and it takes time to search, and then they'll pay you. They'll pay you anywhere between $5,000 and $20,000 to find a property. So if you need $100,000, you go find five or six of those. Good money on the side.
Easy deposit.
Exactly right.
So how would you use the KiwiSaver for people looking at that as an option? Is that very much then your live-in situation?
Well, I think you can use your KiwiSaver. What I would probably tend to do, now, in an ideal world, you'd buy at the bottom of the market, where we are now, currently.
Yeah.
So you go, you draw out your KiwiSaver, you buy what you can afford.
Mm-hmm.
You live in it for the period of time, and then most probably what I would do is sell it and buy a proper quadrant four.
Right.
So you've got your, and you'd have to watch the Bright Line rules. Like, you've got one rule with KiwiSaver, you can live in it for 6 months. But the Bright Line rule, unless it's changed, you have to live in it for a year. So I'd watch that, because I wouldn't want to be paying tax.
Yeah.
And now's a great time. You're at the bottom of the market. You buy that, and then I'd sell it, and then I'd buy an actual quadrant four, being a multi-income. that is going to be cash flow positive. And then you've got to put, this is where it's a dance, and this is what I say, you muddy the waters quite nicely because you've got your emotional, but I want my family home. Of course we do. So what we've got to work out is what's the fastest and easiest way to get there. Is it through property or saving from our job?
Okay. Now, you've mentioned that you've started to write, or you've completed your next book, and that's due out in the new year. So we will chat more in depth next year, but can you give us a little bit of a sneak peek? What is the book number two all about?
Absolutely. So it's the second book in the Property Quadrants series, which it's called No Money Deals, and the byline is How to Buy Property When You're Stuck for Cash. Because basically, whether you're buying your first home or your 101st home, at some point we run out of cash. Yeah. The bank says, no, we're helping you by not letting you take any more risk. And so it was like, well, what do we do?
You're spoiling my fun.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So how do we carry on in property when we're stuck for cash? That's what that book is all about.
And it's a top tip in the book?
Whoa, what is it? Whoa, I've got a couple of this, about five spring to mind all at once. But the top tip in the book is just to keep moving forward, keep going. Like when you listen to the stories from my clients that are in the book, the theme that comes through from all of them is, oh, I didn't think it was possible, but I just kept going anyway. So I did a deal. I was in Tahiti earlier this year and I was finishing the book. And I had just finished writing Ryan's story in the book and I was proofreading it, and it got hot in Tahiti and I jumped in the pool. And I thought, man, that story inspired me. Like he bought this property, had no idea how he's going to pay for it, how the deal was coming together. But he says, you just keep going, keep going. And I was looking at a property deal before I went away and I thought, oh, I haven't got enough money for it either. Then I thought to myself, keep going. So I did. I kept going. And I got out of the pool. I rang the real estate agent. I made the offer and I got the property deal together. And it all worked. It all went through. It was a quadrant three for me. Made me a nice, tidy sum of money that we could then go and pay for our European holiday on. But that came from the top tip. Just keep going because you never know. If you don't give it a go, you definitely won't win. But if you do give it a go, chances are you probably will win if you've got the right group of people to encourage you. That's the other key.
Yeah, talk to me more about that because that's something that you do, don't you, your mentoring program. Yeah.
Well, you think about it. If we think about getting into property, what do? We talk to the people we know, potentially our family, potentially our colleagues at work. If they are not into property, they will say, oh, don't do that. Oh, that's
mortgage rates. Mortgage rates, yes.
Yeah, all sorts of problems. Oh, you'll lose all your life. And so we get put off. So what I say is talk to the people who have what you want. So go and ask a successful property investor about how they built their portfolio. Go and ask a successful property trader about how they flip property well. Go and ask a successful developer about the keys to doing developments. Because what you'll discover, the property people are amazing. There's no BS with them. They tell you the truth. They genuinely like to help. They've got no agenda.
They also don't want to see other people go through the pitfalls that perhaps they've done. Yeah.
Exactly. Property people are fabulous. Yeah. And so, you know, then you'll find you'll get the real answers, not the people who have no idea. And not only that, they'll want to help you. And when you're in those circles, you come away and motivated and inspired. And also, you have people fill in your gaps and your knowledge. I mean, there's three things you need for property: time, money, and knowledge, right? And you can do property with all of those things or none of them if you partner with the other people that have what you don't have.
You've said a few times today about being cash flow positive. Can you explain that in layman terms for someone listening? What is the key to buying the right investment property as cash flow positive?
Good question. So when we buy our family home, quadrant one, of course, we buy the house and then every month we've got to pay our mortgage, then we've got to pay our rates, then we've got to pay our insurance, and then luckily with our own home, if something goes wrong, you know, we can just stick a bucket under the roof to catch the leak if we can't quite afford to fix it. But when we buy a rental property, we can then suddenly have a whole lot of cash going out on a second property if we've got to pay extra mortgage insurance rates, and then we can't say to the tenant, here's a bucket.
Yeah.
We have to actually pay for repairs, and they always come when we haven't got the money.
Yeah.
So cash flow positive is specifically looking for a property which, as I said, is multi-income. So, for example, I own several blocks of units. So I like a block of three units, three two-bedroom units. And you'd get about, say, $400 a week per unit. So you get $1,200 a week. And you might pay $900,000 for one of those. So you're paying $900,000, you're getting $1,200 a week. So after you pay your mortgage, your rates, your insurance, maintenance, and maybe property management, depending on whether you choose to do it yourself or not, you've got money left. So you might have $20 a week left. I think the best one we had was about $1,000 a week left. So that's great.
Yeah.
So therefore, you become cash rich rather than cash poor. And then you can invest that money wisely in something else. So you have an income stream coming off your income stream.
You mentioned, like, the property management. I guess Tafari last week talked about, you know, getting the right professionals involved in the process, you know, finding a lawyer that you trust, a mortgage broker that you trust. What's been some of the keys to your success, I guess, around the people that you've associated yourself with your purchases?
Referrals. You're 100% right.
Yeah.
Your team is everything. A lawyer can make and break it.
Yeah, yeah.
A mortgage broker can find you money you thought was impossible.
Yeah.
A bad one puts you off and you never want to buy again. So the right team is crucial. And what I do is I go to the property investors with big portfolios and say, who do you use? And what you'll find is that, and you get a good lawyer, you ask for a good accountant. You get a good accountant, you ask for a good lawyer. They all refer the same people.
Yeah.
You've got to have the right team. That's absolutely crucial.
All right, time to get your crystal ball out.
Oh, yes.
You know, we're starting to see the market, you know, have some shifts. So what are you seeing the property market doing over the next 6 to 12 months?
Okay, so I think that we have done the turn. We've hit the bottom of the market and we've now started to turn the market, and it's starting to climb again very, very slowly, but it's starting to climb. So I think we'll probably be quiet between now and, say, February. It's October. Traditionally, you don't get that many sales December, January. People are on holiday, Christmas. So a little bit will happen and then we'll be quiet. Then most probably come February, things will start to heat up again, and I think we'll see growth throughout 2025 and 2026. I think we'll peak again somewhere end of 26 to mid 27. We'll see the peak, unless we have some world event that's completely unexpected. But that's what I think we're on the cards to see.
You mentioned about the quiet time over Christmas, but a lot of Kiwi DIYers get their house ready over Christmas period because they're home, they're on holiday, etc. How important is that if you as an investor, do you see through a lot of things and it doesn't bother you, or do you know I need it all finished product style, or does it depend on whether you're planning to go in there, flip it, etc.?
Well, actually, it depends who your buyer is.
Okay.
So if you're getting a house ready, like if I'm doing a flip, I'm going to sell it to a homeowner. A homeowner, they're quadrant one.
Yeah.
They're emotional.
Right.
So they need to fall in love with the property.
Yeah.
So what you need to make sure you do all the little things. Change out your door handles, for example. Don't paint your doors beautifully and leave the cruddy old door handles on. Make sure you paint your windows, or window sills, I should say, as well as your walls. Don't just leave those. Little things, like get window cleaning companies in to come and actually clean the inside and the outside of the windows. Because when people don't notice when things are clean and beautiful, the house just has a wow factor. Mm. But if something's grimy and horrible, man, they notice that. And then they go, oh, what else is wrong with the house? Or they think if it's been renovated, oh, they've done a shonky job.
Right, right.
So the small details, if the house is empty, stage it. Staging is worth its weight in gold, because a home buyer can't imagine it.
Mm.
And an empty room always looks smaller.
Mm. True. Selling that quadrant one emotional house that we're all attached to, if you later decide that could become an investment and put tenants in, should you or should you sell it? And the reason why I ask it, I always remember being a property manager, this one house, excuse me, and I can remember it clear as anything, and they wanted to turn their family home into an investment property and have it rented. And they took me up to the front door, and by the time I'd got from the letterbox to the front door, they'd already told me three stories about growing up in this house. So the warning bells was going off for me because they had emotional attachment. Opened the door, and it still had plastic over the carpet. The kitchen was that bright yellow orange from the 60s, 70s. Like, I almost felt like I'd gone into a museum house. It was so immaculately cared for. And I can remember saying to the owner, I hadn't even stepped like three more steps in, and I said, look, the first thing I'm going to tell you to do is sell it. You need to sell this because you are so emotionally attached. You've told so many stories. I can tell you now that that tenant moving in doesn't have that attachment, and that plastic's going to get ripped by the moving company because they're not careful like you. They're going to struggle with the bright yellow and bright orange kitchen because it is a thing of the past. And I remember them being so almost offended at this. And of course, what happened? They insisted, and a tenant moved in, and the plastic got ripped, and they literally said, you were so right, we should have sold this, because all our stories are in here. Do you agree that when that time comes, you're better to sell it rather than turn that and then use the money to purchase other investment properties?
I totally agree, because it's a separate quadrant.
Yeah.
You know, and each quadrant's got totally different thinking.
Mm.
You've got to let go of your old house and put your emotions into your new house and create new memories. And if you want to therefore start an investment portfolio, you need to buy a property where your money is working for you.
Yeah.
And it's not emotional, it's all about the numbers.
What do, or how do apartments stack up in an investment situation? Because, you know, to the naked eye, you can pick up an apartment at half the price of a house in Auckland, but of course you run the risk of what other body court rules and costs and things are involved. What do you see them as? Are they useful?
No. I mean, sorry. I mean, all these people are going to go right and go... Look, I've bought apartments.
It's your experience.
I've bought apartments, and the numbers look fantastic, especially if you put it in a holiday letting pool or your Airbnb it. But the numbers on a spreadsheet do not equal reality. A couple of reasons, like you mentioned, the body corporate. So, first of all, when the building's relatively new, the body corporate's relatively low. But as that building gets older, it gets higher.
Mm.
You've also got a massive risk. I know of people that have had to sell. They've lost their house because the body corporate's had to reclad, or they've had to refire rate, or they've had to upgrade their sprinkler system or their elevator system because a new fire safety comes out, and it's an extra however many 100,000 that gets split between the owners. And if you can't afford it, you have to sell. And also the numbers, that you just don't get enough rent to cover your mortgage, your body corporate, your maintenance, your property management. It doesn't work. And they don't appreciate as well as house and land.
Right.
So, you know, I'm all about get on the ladder.
Yeah.
But I'm thinking, correct.
Yeah.
And if you've got a limited budget, an apartment is an option. But I bought a little two-bedroom units down the South Island for under $400,000, bringing in $750 a week. It's a far better investment. It's hard to find, but they're there if you know what to look for.
Yeah, and regularly looking.
Correct.
Because those ones go really quick.
But
because people like you are looking.
Absolutely. But now you can see why you can make some money in quadrant three as a property finder. Because people will I pay my finders $20,000 if they bring me a great property.
Wow.
Because it's worth it.
Mm.
So you can make good money there.
Brilliant. Stephen will be signing up to his part-time job after this show. I'll go on for finding. Should you buy a property for capital gain for cash flow?
Yes. So capital gain and cash flow are two different things. Most of the time, a capital gain property does not have cash flow. It's negative. So it's a quadrant two. So I would say 25% of your property portfolio can be in quadrant two, 75% in quadrant four. But you want to buy your capital gain property after you've got your cash flow coming in from quadrant four, so that can pay the mortgage for you. So you're not having to dip into your wages.
Right. We talked earlier, we mentioned the word flipping. I meant to come back to that. So for anyone listening who doesn't understand, what is flipping?
So flipping is when you buy a house, you renovate it, and you sell it. Okay, and that's another huge topic because some people will be, oh, I'm a handyman, a builder, a plumber, or whatever. I'll buy it and live on it and do it myself. So, in the book, I actually, in Property Quadrants, I talk about this. I've got a scenario where Pete does exactly that. I'm going to go and do it all myself. And I lay out the numbers, and his hourly rate works out to, I forget what it is now, it's like something like 70 cents an hour or something, versus, I'm not handy at all. I've got no idea how to screw in a screw. Well, maybe not that useless, but pretty close. I have a full team that does it all for me. We'll turn a house around within 3 weeks. So you turn it around within 3 weeks and it's sold within another, say, 3 weeks, settles within 3 weeks. So 3 months, settlement to settlement, make about 70 to 100,000. My hourly rate's about $4,000 an hour because I spend about 5 hours on site. So how do I use my time? I go look for the next one.
Yeah.
So you work out your scenario. And that's what I mean, time, money and knowledge. You can do it with all or none. You can have a property finder find it for you. You can have a project manager run the project for you. And you can get a property coach to teach you what to look for.
Mm.
You know, it's all just a case of everything's doable.
Yeah, yeah, love it. And if someone's a first-time buyer listening to the show going, how do I just get that first one?
Well, good question, because one, it's an emotional purchase, so it sort of depends on where they're looking. But there's, other than KiwiSaver and other than mum and dad helping you in, the other two ways of getting your first one is getting stuck into Quadrant 3. Doesn't matter if you don't have any money. Go and join, if you're in Auckland, or wherever you are in the country, go and join your Property Investor Association. They're all over the country.
Yeah.
Go and join them. They're brilliant. All the property investors go there. So go to the events. Get chatting to them. Find out how you can help people. It's never about how I can make money. It's all about how can I help you. And there'll be investors are looking for properties all the time. Find out what they want and go and look for something for them. And then make a small amount of money on the way through. And then that'll build from there. You'll make friends, you'll build relationships, you'll find joint venture partners, and you can do a deal yourself. You can have a money partner that'll put the money in, and because they haven't got the time, but they got the money, and you split the profits 50-50. There's all sorts that will grow from that small step of just getting to know people.
How do you mitigate the risk as a property manager, a property investor?
Risk is, de-risk is knowledge.
Right.
So the more you know, the less risk it is. But you see, I'm all one for leverage. So if I don't have money, I'll leverage someone else's money. If I don't have time, I'll leverage someone else's time. If I don't have knowledge, I'll leverage someone else's knowledge. Like, I'm big on coaching. I myself have got a business coach. I always feel that I'm far more productive when I have a coach to steer me in the right direction. There's a lot of property coaches out there. So I think it's a great idea to get a property coach. If you do, though, I always say look for one that guarantees results. I've paid for a lot of coaching in the past. Not property, just coaching in the past. Doesn't guarantee me results. I've spent a lot of money for not much. So look for the right person and someone that you gel with, someone that you genuinely get on with and someone that's accessible. No point having a coach you can't actually speak to. So I think they're well worth their, I think they're worth their weight in gold. But you can also get a lot of knowledge from meeting property investors that are happy to talk to you.
And you mentioned the property investment associations. There's also groups, even just groups on Facebook, etc., that you can join, and there's lots of interesting conversations there.
Exactly.
Especially when new laws and legislation comes out, it's quite good to get everyone's point of view on that.
I agree. Yeah.
Do you have a favourite space that you're in?
Oh, look, some of those groups are, I mean, I've got my own, which is passive property investment with the property lifestyle. I used to, you know, some of them have grown really big, which is awesome, but then you can get a bit of negativity as well.
Right.
So you've got to watch that.
It is an online space.
Exactly. And so I don't want you to be put off if you ask a question and you get all these negative comments. Because people are people, whereas with the associations, there's not really any negativity. Oh, no, there's a little bit, I suppose, everywhere, but not as much. And the other thing is, too, it's an online world. Maybe my kids will say I'm old-fashioned. But if you want to find a property for someone or get to the point where you can build a relationship so you have a money partner, they need to know you. They need to know you, they need to like you, they need to trust you, and you have to meet. But online forums is a great way to start and see if there's people in your local area.
Absolutely. Apart from knowledge, other ways to mitigate your risk?
Well, financial is one, like doing things with a partner.
Okay.
And that's where I think quadrant three is a good risk mitigator. Like if you just become a property finder, you earn as you learn. So you're not buying anything, so you've got zero risk. You're just finding something for someone else. And then you'll learn from what they're looking for because they're more experienced, and you make money with zero risk.
Brilliant. As Kiwis, are we good at property investment, or as a nation are we a little bit more on the nervous side, risk-averse side?
Definitely the latter.
Yeah. What do you see around the world? What are some of the differences?
Well, interestingly enough, New Zealand is probably one of the more difficult countries to invest in. So we've got, in one sense, like we've got, and I used to do property in Australia, and they rang me, the Australian company rang me not so long ago, a few months ago, to say, hey, you know, do you want to do some work for us again? And I said, well, some of our laws have changed in New Zealand now. Like we have to have a 40% deposit. Now it's only 30. They go, what? Now, hang on. Something's wrong with the phone. What deposit? 40%. 40. I'm like, yeah. They're like, you got to be kidding me. So, and you know, you get things like that. In America, you can lock your interest rate for 30 years.
Wow.
So, you know, they had their 1% they got down to. You lock it in for 30 years. I mean, that's so awesome. In America, you can wholesale a property. In New Zealand, that's all illegal. We can't do any of that stuff here. So, and you know, but in our way, we don't have tax. We don't have stamp duty. We don't have inheritance tax. We've got a bright line, but it's not a CGT yet. So from that point of view, it's a little bit easier. So there's pros and cons. Yeah.
Who inspired you? You know, in your early days of investing, was there people or groups, things that inspired you along this path?
Yes,
because the book Property Quadrants wasn't out when you started.
No, it wasn't. I didn't know. No, I had probably a couple of key people along the way. There was a guy I met, his name's Sean, and I mentioned him in the book, and he's now lives in Australia, and he first told me about no money deals. And I talk about it in the book, you know, up rocks Sean, he drives up in his Porsche and walks in like he's just, you know, his presence in the room. I'm like, who's that guy? And then I meet him and he's like, oh, I do property with no money. And I'm like, what is this? And just the nice, and this is what I mean by property people, the nicest guy you could possibly meet. So keen and willing to help and share what he does. And, you know, he was a big inspiration. And the other person, I think, was Rustica. So my friend Rustica, that we started a little group called, we called it Networking Referral Group, and she was really interested in property, and we had a mortgage broker join us. His name was Adam, and our friend Sarah, who was a real estate agent at the time, they all joined us, and we all talked property. And I think Rustica was very instrumental. She started doing property flips, which we called renos at the time, and she started writing a book. She goes, I'm going to call it Dolly's Do-Ups. I still say, I remember, it never got published, but I remember that, Dolly's Do-Ups. So, you know, they were some key people back then.
I love that. All right, we've only got a minute left. Future goals. When I interview you in the new year about your next book, what will you have achieved by then?
Well,
That
book will hit international bestseller as well and help out a whole lot more people. And book three, which is going to be called Bankrupt to Billionaire, I am trialling that now. Multi-million dollar deals, give it a shot, will be, maybe, I would have written the first line.
Now, the show replays over the Christmas break, so if our listeners are listening at Christmas time, not school holidays, as I started the show, are you resting up? Do you take a break? Do you look after yourself in this crazy world?
Oh, absolutely. Don't work December, January. Spend it with the family.
Nice. Beautiful. How can people get in touch, get your books, find out more?
So my book is online, propertyquadrants.com. It should be also in bookstores. It's on Audible for download as well and on Kindle, so you can get it any way you like. I'm with The Property Lifestyle. You can phone me, email me. I'm always available. You can book a call with me on Calendly and let's talk property. Happy to help you in any way I can.
So just do a Google for The Property Lifestyle?
The Property Lifestyle or Google me.
Fabulous. Nicole, always a pleasure having you here. We're going to go off here now and I'm going to go home and start looking up some properties for Nicole, I think. I could do with that little learner to help me on my ladder. Thanks so much for joining us. Have a fabulous week, everyone else. We'll catch you again next week on Property Matters. Have a good one.